The date is June 15th, 1990, and we're watching Dick Tracy. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the D.A. Fletcher to my big boy caprice.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
Gotta celebrate Dick Van Dyke. He's like 99 years old right now, isn't he?
Yeah, he's one of those guys I always see in movies, and I'm like, is he still alive?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So this week we do have a guest back that we last had here on for our Jurassic Park episode. A charitable man who does more for military veterans than I do for my own goddamn kids. One of the hosts of the Oblivion Bar podcast, Mr. Aaron Knowles. Welcome back, Aaron.
Hey, I am so glad to be back. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm very excited to be talking some Dick Tracy. It's been a long time since I've seen this. Has it been a long time for you?
Yes.
Yeah?
This is a very nostalgic movie for me. When I was a kid growing up, my dad was the dreamer in the household. He was the sci-fi guru. He was the fantasy guru. And so he shared that with me because my mom was, you know, doing her own thing. My brother was the sports kid and, you know, he had that aspect. But me and my dad, we always watch stuff like this. And I think back to when I was a kid and, oh my gosh, this movie was a lot better back then.
Right on. Well, we'll get to that in a little bit here. This week we are looking back at June 1990 when the movies in theaters were Another 48 Hours, Gremlins 2, The New Batch, Jetsons the Movie, Total Recall, and of course our movie for today, Dick Tracy, which earned $162.7 million on a $47 million budget.
Ooh, see you at the potty, Richta.
But as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so we don't want to have to put anybody in what I've heard is called like a cement suitcase or a concrete suitcase.
The bath is what this thing is called.
We don't want to have to put anybody in that to avoid spoilers, so please just hit pause, go watch the movie, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So I found three taglines for this movie. The first one is their turf, their game, their rules. They didn't count on his law.
Ooh.
It's almost a Judge Dredd type.
Sure.
There is a moment in the movie where you know, Al Pacino, who is one of the stars, does say, "I am the law."
That's true. So is that whose law? Like, I feel like the tagline is talking about Dick Tracy's law, but the way you just phrased it, it's like, no, that's Big Boy Caprice's law.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll get into it. I have thoughts, but I'll save it.
TBD.
Well, the second tagline is, "I'm on my way."
Sure. I guess he does say that a lot.
And the third one, "When do we eat?"
That's actually my favorite one, just because it's so funny. But it's like you would really only know, how could that be a tagline when like. You would only know what that means by watching the movie. That's not a draw.
Yeah. it would make you go, the fuck? And go in to see the movie, right?
I guess.
I mean, maybe it was something that, like, if you were really well, you know, understood with the comic strip, maybe that was, like, an ongoing thing in the comic strip.
That's possibly.
You know, that's the only I can think of, because... Yeah, when do we eat?
But it may not be a very good description of this movie, so let's go to Colin and get a 60-second synopsis.
This is going to be much longer than 60 seconds.
That's what she said.
Oh!
Lovely. Okay. In a city where every criminal appears to be afflicted with some sort of facial disfigurement, a young street kid stumbles into a card game and observes a bunch of gangsters get murdered by other equally grotesque gangsters while playing a game of cards. Word of the hit makes it to hard-boiled detective Dick Tracy, who takes a break from watching the opera with his girlfriend Tess to investigate the murder and determines it was orchestrated by local kingpin Big Boy Caprice. Tracy makes it back in time to catch the end of the show and afterwards, on his way to a diner, runs into the kid witness, who has freshly stolen someone's wallet, tracks the kid down to the shack his family lives in, and after beating the snot out of the kid's abusive father, he takes the kid, whose name is actually Kid, in as his, I don't know, adoptee until child services can come and resolve that situation. Meanwhile, Big Boy gives club owner Lips Manless the Han Solo treatment by encasing him in concrete after Manless signs over the deed to Club Ritz. He also steals Lips' girl, Breathless Mahoney, and forces her to work as a singer in his new club. Tracy tracks down and interrogates Big Boy's gang, Itchy Flat Top, and Mumbles before eventually arresting Big Boy for Manless's murder, but when he tries to interrogate Breathless, she just wants to seduce him instead of providing a witness statement. And now without a credit...
What the fuck?
Yeah, I was like, how crass do I be? So without a credible witness, Big Boy is released. Dick, Tess, and the kid have a fun day out on the town, giving Tracy a glimpse of family life, but the moment is interrupted by Big Boy's henchmen who try to make a move to take out Tracy. Big Boy hatches... the next few ones should just be like, Big Boy hatches a plan to kill Tracy, it goes wrong... but in the first instance, he first tries to convince Tracy to join him after he comes up with a plot to, like, rouse all the local gangsters under him so that they can, you know, shake people down for nickels and dimes. But when Tracy refuses, the kid comes and makes the save. He becomes a local hero and gets a medal. And then, oh, all of a sudden, a faceless, mysterious faceless person appears on the scene. I don't know. There's some, like... I'm a comics guy. This is clearly the question, but I think people take to calling him the blank. And he, at first, it's unclear what he's about, but, you know. Anyways, side point. Tracy and Breathless continue to do their game of cat and mouse, and eventually, after he gives in to her wiles and he makes out with them, but oh no, Tess walks in and sees the whole thing, and then she takes off. But then, oh no, Tracy and his boys, they decide to orchestrate a raid, but only so that they can set up a wire in Big Boy Caprice's place. And that works for a little while, and they got his number, but then all of a sudden, Dummy spills the coffee, the whole plan is unraveled, and now Big Boy turns the tables. Once more, captures Tracy, tries to encase him in concrete, doesn't work. And then, where am I now?
that's what we were all asking while we're watching the movie, by the way.
Where am I? Here? Oh, yeah. Then the mysterious faceless person, the blank, the question comes back. And all of a sudden now he's going to play Big Boy and Tracy against each other. So first he kidnaps Tess and then he frames Tracy for the murder of Dick Van Dyke in a weird scheme. But then fortunately for Dick Tracy, the cops in this town that is the town ever actually named? I missed that if it is.
No.
Okay.
No.
So the cops in this town are, like, extremely corrupt, and they take care of their own. So instead of taking Tracy to prison, they just free him so he can continue on his crusade. And then, at the climax of the film, bullets fly, cars flip, people die, and a lot of things explode. Tracy and the cops have their final showdown with Big Boy and his goons. Dick races to free Tress from Big Boy, who's, you know, he goes old-school Bond villain and straps her to a giant gear in a drawbridge tower. And then, you know, her head's gonna get crushed. He puts the gun down, but then... The faceless person comes back and is like, no, Tracy, you join me and we'll take this town for our own. And then the kid trips her. She drops her. Oh, I just gave it away. He drops his gun. Big Boy shoots the faceless person. Tracy drops Big Boy down the shaft of the thing. And then, wouldn't you know it, the mask is pulled off and it was Breathless Mahoney the whole time. Weirdest ending to a movie I've probably ever seen. But then the capper is just that, you know, at the end of the day, Dick, the kid, and Tess, they'll just go have breakfast, it seems, and live happily ever after. So, the end.
One of the most convoluted plots, and I say plots with a capital S, in a movie I've ever seen. Because, like, I felt like this movie was supposed to end, like, 16 times.
Thank you.
And they just added more to another plot. Like, wow.
Yeah. Wow. I felt that's why I felt it was so hard to like summarize the movie. Other than that probably would have been better, like just when you think it's gonna end. Oh, it keeps going. Another plan another plan is hatched to kill Dick Tracy that gets foiled, and then but there really was no good villain through line, weirdly.
So if I could describe this movie, if I had to give some kind of description to this movie, I would say that this was somebody had taken like plot points from Star Wars, from Batman, and from like what is another like crime story that was, I don't know,
The Shadow,
yes, and like mashed it all together, just to make the most like just magnanimous, convoluted, complex storyline ever. Because like there's the scene where you know Big Boy Caprice is thrown down the shaft. Like, why is there a shaft that deep? Yeah. All right, that was very much you know Return of the Jedi. The whole scene where like there's several scenes I say where Dick Tracy, Warren Beatty is like climbing the sides of buildings, you know, and he's like very Batman-esque in that. But why is he on the side of a building? He literally does nothing on the side of that building. He doesn't even get to the window that he looks like he's attempting to peek into, you know? This child that they somehow award with an honorary... The kid, by the way, who I'm talking about, they award with an honorary detective certificate. Dick Tracy then starts taking him to crime scenes and crimes occurring with... Like, there's so much wrong with this movie.
Well, let's get into it.
Sorry, I'm knee-deep in this bullshit. Yeah.
Well, you know, we got to stick a little bit with the format of the show. I mean, I want to go back. I want to rewind to 1990, 12-year-old Sean. And I was all in for this movie back then. I mean, one album that I remember buying was the I'm Breathless Madonna album. I, you know, it was like this movie was kind of my prepubescent sexual awakening. I remember that was back when movies were showing Roger Rabbit cartoons before the movie. So this one was preceded by Roller Coaster Rabbit. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids was another one that had a Roger Rabbit cartoon. I had a book that was a behind-the-scenes making of Dick Tracy, because that's how cool I was as a junior high student, is that I was into shit like that. But it felt like a spiritual sequel to Roger Rabbit. You know, like, it's kind of a more grown-up version without going full Godfather. Or, you know, like, maybe a feeling of, you know, you brought it up, like Batman, 1930s Gotham, you know, here's a spiritual sequel to Batman 89. Most recently, in 2021, I was doing Elf the Musical, and we had a Secret Santa gift exchange, and the person that got me bought me a Big Boy Caprice figurine. and I'm like, that is so random, and that is the coolest thing ever. And so I've had Dick Tracy in my mind for a year now. And so I reached out to you, Aaron, because I thought with the Oblivion Bar, you guys are sponsored by a comic book shop, you're sponsored by Shortboxed, you know. I know that comic stuff is usually your co-host Chris's area of expertise, but, you know, like I figured I've got a craving for Dick Tracy. I want to bring on a comic guy, someone that's at least comic adjacent in the in his podcast. And you're like, this movie was totally my childhood, but I'm pretty sure you're much younger than I am. I'm pretty sure you're more in Colin's age range, like mid-30s, right?
I'm 37.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you're kind of between me and Colin.
Yeah.
Okay, so I mean, I'm thinking I'm a 12-year-old boy watching this movie. Were you watching this at 6? Like, did you see this in the theater?
I don't know if I saw this in the theater, but I definitely was, like, earlier than 10, you know, watching it with my dad. You know, I can't say that it was in theater. I just remember watching it. I mean, at that point, you know, being like, you know, between 5 and 10, you know, every screen was a big screen for me. So it's like, I probably watched it on television or like on a, you know, VHS at home with my father. It could have been a Betamax. I don't know, but it could have been a Laserdisc. Who knows? But yeah, I definitely remember watching this at an early age, and I was, man, I wanted the Radio Watch so badly, oh, man. You know.
Yeah, that's like a 1930s iWatch is what that is, you know.
Yep, and like nowadays we have the actual like walkie-talkie features on our watches to where we're all running around like people today, like kids today, will never understand that this is a piece of technology that we wanted as a child and now have, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah,
but totally. I absolutely actually do remember reading the Dick Tracy comic strip. In papers, you know, I was a big fan of that. I was a big fan of the artwork. I was a big fan of the different villains, you know, the gangsters, and as Colin you know, described in his 60 second plus breakdown,
supersized 60 second synopsis, that's what it is. Yeah.
Yes, so I read like all of these gangsters were like they tried Warren Beatty, you know, when he was directing this, tried to slam as many of those gangsters from the original comic strip into this, fearing that he wouldn't get a chance to make a sequel. So seeing all of those gangsters,
good instincts,
yeah. from reading it, you know, it was really cool. It was really cool to see them attempt to, you know, make into reality these, you know, gross, you know, disfigured gangsters.
Yeah, like Colin brought up, do they ever mention the city? I mean, I read that it's a hybrid of New York and Chicago. I'd like to argue that maybe it's Flint, Michigan, because there's got to be something in the water causing all these deformities.
You don't go there. I think that they said that. So I read that when Dick Tracy actually holds up the file. On, I want to say it might be Mumbles or it might be Big Boy Caprice, but his home of record is a city called Homeville.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
so it could be like a city named Homeville, you know. Yeah.
There you go. There's Metropolis and, you know, Smallville. I mean, those aren't places either. So Gotham, you know, yeah, Homeville. That's quite possible. That's Edge City. Yeah. So, Colin, now, what about you? What's your history with Dick Tracy?
Yes, I mean, I remember watching this movie for the very first time about 6 hours ago. And okay. That's about my extent of my history. I am, like, I mean, as a comic books enthusiast, like, I'm aware of Dick Tracy, but I have, like, no touchstones, really, with the character, other than... For whatever reason, I remember it was probably the action figures for this movie, or maybe there was a cartoon show, I don't remember, but like I remember seeing them in the store a lot and be like, oh, that looks mm-hmm. interesting. And then I think back in the day where, you know, you could get those children's books that would come with a cassette tape that you could kind of listen to as you read along.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure I'm pretty sure I had a Dick Tracy book like that when I was a kid. But
yeah.
I'd never seen this movie before. I honestly thought it was a lot older than it is. I have always thought of Dick Tracy as being a movie from like the 1970s or the 1960s. Like I thought it was an old movie. I was surprised when I saw it came out in 1990 or 1991, whatever it was. But
well, there's been various Dick Tracy things, like series over the years, mm-hmm. That they've tried to do. So it's been around in live action before.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a movie.
Okay.
Yeah, it was created in the 30s, I want to say. And then they had a radio show, they had a comic strip.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was even, I want to say early 70s, it was actually in development as a musical. Like a stage musical, and yeah. I think the one of the things that really kind of like so Colin, one thing I wanted to ask you about this, since and it's great that you've just watched it. If you were to black and white this entire movie out, would you not think that it had something to do with Frank Miller's Sin City?
Yeah, totally. Like I think that's the vibe. Like obviously it's not as dark as that, but I thought that's what Dick Tracy was. I didn't realize this movie was gonna be so, for lack of like campy, I guess. Like I thought it was gonna be more like noir, like crime detective, kind of like hard boiled, like Sin City. Yeah, totally.
I like to burn matches and let them burn out till they burn my fingers. So I know how it feels like
exactly,
to be alive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump into Dick Tracy, directed by Warren Beatty, produced by Warren Beatty, and written by Chester Gould, who gets the based on characters, Jim Cash, Jack Epps Jr., who both have nearly identical IMDbs. We would have seen them before in our Secret of My Success episode that we did. And so I was surprised that when they opened this movie, the Touchstone logo, because, I mean, the one thing I really remember about Dick Tracy is just how vibrant it is. And I was surprised to see a black and white Touchstone logo. Like, it's just a weird choice of many weird choices, but it is a weird choice.
Number one of a thousand.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, like it also just feels like Batman 89 because like you get so much Danny Elfman and it's almost the same thing.
It's
almost like it was the rejected Batman
theme. It's the exact same music. Just like, I swear Danny Elfman just took the Batman score and was like, okay, you know what?
Put it in a minor key.
Take this note down. Yeah, like just switch. Yeah. Like let's just switch it off a little bit and just make
some minor adjustments. He flipped it upside
down.
Nobody
will know.
Yeah.
Nobody will know. Nobody's ever even watched this.
I was also trying to figure out if it's part of the aesthetic of the film or just like I've never watched a movie other than Batman that's so clearly filmed on a soundstage somewhere. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the way that Batman kind of saves it is everything is dark. Like this movie is so like light and then pastel everywhere, and there's no cars anywhere. That bothered me. That bothered me the entire movie. There's no cars and there's no people walking. Like there's like one person on the street.
Well, see, not even pastels, because when I think of pastels, I think of something like Cat in the Hat.
Sure.
Right. I mean, like this is very strong primary colors. And I mean, it's clearly going for the look of actually being a comic book.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, can we at least all agree that no matter how convoluted the story gets, this is a beautiful movie. The art direction is absolutely stunning. Like, you have to admit that no matter what you think of this movie.
If I could compare it to anything, I would say that this movie looks like it was filmed in like on like one of the Disneyland like areas or like even Hollywood Studios, like the Islands of Adventures. Even down to the point where in the beginning, again, referring back to Colin's super short 60 second plus summary, there's the scene where Dick Tracy follows the kid into his shack, and it's obvious the shack is like on like motors. Mm-hmm. As it's like going back and forth as Dick Tracy's beating the crap out of the kid's, I guess, guardian. It's like just going, you could probably hear the motors on the soundstage go like swinging the shack back and forth. But it's like, again, like all of it looks and you're absolutely right, Sean. I agree with you so much. It looks exactly like it was like pulled off of the comic strips and put onto a soundstage. Mm-hmm. Just the color.
It's probably not even hydraulics complicated, by the way. It's probably a couple guys in there moving it back and forth. Yeah.
Just near left, right. Yeah.
But I mean, if you went to a Broadway show and this is what you saw, you would be like, holy shit. That was one of the most incredible Broadway shows I've ever seen.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like set direction wise, at least.
This was definitely like very operatically scened, if that's a way I can state it.
Yeah. Which, you know, they do have the literal opera to open up this movie. And
exactly.
having experienced my first opera only a few months ago and discovering just how long they actually are, I can totally sympathize with how this scene could still be happening with the same set even. That was one detail I liked, is that they did switch it from day to night in the set, but it was still the same set. Like, it was clearly the same song. And, you know, I thought that was a fun touch. But this whole montage to open up is, like, it's clearly showing, I guess for the people that remember the comics, it's all, hey, remember this? Here's his watch. Here's his hat. Huh? We're doing it. Like, that's very much how it is. But because it's filmed to look like a comic, that might be why you had so much trouble with your synopsis, is because it also meanders like a serial comic would have. It's like, okay, you know, this 10 minutes is this week's worth of comics, you know? And then, oh, like a soap opera, there's a twist.
That is true, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, broadly, like, this story I found, like, really, I thought the story was going to end somewhere around the point where then they try to, like, bug the place and keep going. Like, that was where I was like, what is happening in this movie? But I do appreciate the comic book aspect of this movie in terms of the visual and how it looks. But it is kind of funny because not knowing anything and it being so far removed, it's like the only thing I know about Dick Tracy is the yellow suit. That's like, if I think of Dick Tracy, that's the only thing that comes to mind for me. Everything else has just kind of, I didn't realize like the watch was like a big thing or anything like that. But
just to add to your visual of how cool I was in junior high, I also wanted a yellow trench coat.
Nice.
I mean, I would have ended up looking like the man in the yellow hat from, like, you know, Curious George or something. But, you know, yeah, that's how cool I was.
Can we just real quick talk about, though, like, this movie, despite all of its issues, despite all of its, like, just long-ass plot and it twists that meander in it, like the you know, Pocahontas' river, you know, the cast of this movie is so
stacked
and deep in experience. Like, there are people in this movie that you would never have expected. Like, honestly, like when we went back and watched it and I saw Al Pacino as Big Boy Caprice, it shocked me. I was like, is that Al Pacino? I don't remember that.
I felt the same. Like, I could not believe that Al Pacino was in this movie. And then I couldn't believe that Dustin Hoffman was in this movie.
Yeah.
Playing such a like weird character.
Yeah. No, but and even someone like Kathy Bates being in this movie before she was like fucking Kathy Bates, like before Misery, you know, like it's and you can look at her in her like 30 seconds of screen time that she has and go, okay, that's someone special.
Yeah.
I mean, you know that that's going to be something special.
Yeah, well, you got people like Catherine O'Hara, you know, who we all know and love from Beetlejuice and Schitt's Creek if you watch it, Kathy Bates, Dustin Hoffman, Al Pacino.
Already mentioned Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah, James
Mandy Patinkin.
Mandy Patinkin. Mandy Patinkin clearly in love with Madonna's character. We haven't even mentioned that Madonna is in this movie, by the way.
Yeah.
And obviously, okay, I'm just going to throw out there, like, that's one thing that I will always remember about Dick Tracy when I first watched it, was how just voluptuous and gorgeous Madonna looks in this movie. And she actually acted pretty well in it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple parts where it's, but, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, she plays her character, like, I feel like that is Madonna. I just felt like that was Madonna.
Yeah, that's the channeling of Marilyn Monroe. Yes. I remember that, yes, this was the phase where she did that. Mm-hmm. And then she went into, like, Vogue and her sex book, Madonna. Mm-hmm. And then nowadays she, like, looks really weird. But she was dynamite in this movie. And like I mentioned before, I mean, for a prepubescent 12-year-old boy, it's like that sheer nightdress that she wears at that one point where it's like, hey, hashtag free the nipple, ladies. You know, it did things for me back then. You know, that videotape part got paused a little bit. Wow.
Well, moving on.
But yeah, Glenn Headley as Tess. You know, the other person that I wanted to talk about was like Paul Sorvino. Paul Sorvino has been, and still is, stars in some of the best. Is he? I mean, I'm not sure. Is he alive?
No.
No, he
recently
died
this
year.
Yeah.
So he has starred in some of the biggest and best mafia movies and things like that. And he gets taken out rather quickly in this movie, which is really sad. But
same with the Corleone brothers. You get Sonny Corleone in for another like little 3-minute scene, and then he gets blowed up.
But there's nothing like watching Paul Sorvino like suck down just like, you know, the
oyster.
Oyster. I was uncomfortable. Like that was not part of my sexual awakening, you know?
Who is Catherine? I didn't even realize Catherine O'Hara was in this movie.
She's at the table. She's one of the mob bosses. She's just kind of jammed in there. Funny enough is that Macaulay Culkin was an alternate casting as the kid, but he chose to do Home Alone instead.
Oof,
and
wow.
It's like, well, your mom did both, Kevin.
Okay, yeah.
I guess she lost him on the way to the audition.
On the way to the audition. Yeah, but they picked up this kid, this Charlie Cosmo kid. He's like the only kid that or person that's not really big after this. He's a lawyer now. He did like four movies and now he's a lawyer. He was in Hook,
which I was gonna say Hook. He was really annoying in that movie, but I loved Hook. I love Hook. It's one of my favorite movies ever. But I'm kind of glad that. Imagine if he was Macaulay or if he was Kevin McAllister. Yeah,
no, I know. He's better as a orphan child. He really plays that, you know, starved, you know, homely look more than Kevin does. Kevin looks pampered, and you know the McAllister's got money. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and not gaining an ounce. Yeah.
Plus, he doesn't. He doesn't like dames.
Yeah,
doesn't like dames.
Good. Neither do I.
Right on. So there was one moment in this opening montage bit that I do want to point out is that when we do see the kid eating for the first time, speaking of the kid and when do we eat, is when he takes that sandwich out of the garbage can, that's the cleanest looking sandwich I've ever seen. Like, I don't know about you. Like, if I go to Subway and can't finish my $5 foot long, you know, I take that extra little bit and I gingerly place it on top of the garbage, make sure that there's nothing else around it.
It's very nice of you. Sure. Unlike the movie Spawn, where, you know, I was going to say it looks like the same kid, but he's like, but it's rotten.
Wow. I need to do Spawn. Holy cow. Colin, have you seen Spawn?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had that movie back in the day. I was a Spawn fan.
Yeah. Nice. So the kid, he stumbles across the gangster poker game. You know, you got to wonder with these scenes, like what's going through these actors' heads? Like, what a bizarre day of filming all these guys have had. Or, you know, like around the conference table as well. Like, they're sitting around playing poker with all these absolutely ridiculous masks on. But I love that, you know, this movie just leans into it. They're like, nope, this is how they're drawn. It's kind of like, you know, in The Good Place when Chidi, I don't know if you're Good Place watchers, but there's one where Chidi draws a horse and it comes to life and it's like, you know, Frankenstein, did you create me type horse? And, you know, I love that they just lean into it. No, this guy, his face is supposed to look like it's, you know, four butts lined up. We're going to make sure those creases are deep.
I really want to know, like, you know, philosophically, when you look at these gangsters and they're disfigured or deformed, did that lead to them becoming the gangster, or were they disfigured? And you know, is that like they got sent to a school for gangsters because you're disfigured in Homeville, like you are now going to be in the gangster career path, or does becoming a gangster disfigure them? You know, like that's the question.
I think what happens is they become gangsters, they make some money, and then they get deep into like bad plastic surgery.
Oh, some sort of like ceremonial, like, you know, disfigurement maybe?
Yeah, it's like everybody has to have a shtick. So, you know, Flat Top, like, he gets a little skull prosthetics put in. The prune, I don't know what happened. Prune face, I don't know. I don't know what happened to him. I don't know that anybody chooses that.
Yeah, I don't know. I just want to see something like clamps. I'm going to clamp you, you know?
Yeah. Either that or my other theory was that it's more along the lines of like they live in this rough side of town that maybe does have some sort of water contamination problem that's then causing. Mm. So like So they're like poor and basically crime is their only way out.
So what we're not seeing, because I want to, like, I, you know, sometimes I just want to delve into these, like, what if situations. So, like, on that side of town, is there, like, a whole, like, new, like, generation of younger thugs that, you know, are going to be, like, just as deformed, you know? Or, you know, how come we didn't see any of them? Like, where are these guys' families? Like, are their kids deformed? Are they, like, is this, like, I don't know. There's just so much to it, because these guys, yeah, very, like, prune face. I feel bad for saying it, but I'm going to say it. He's grotesque looking, you know? Littleface was literally like a big freaking head with a tiny little face. And it was like just weird. And then that one guy that had like the beak nose was like Rat Boy. Like, it's so messed up to see some of these guys, because I could honestly see that in this world, they were probably bullied to the point where they all just became crime lords.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. And I mean, that's what not being hugged as a child does to you. Right? Like, the guy in the shack was going to create a new... That was going to be the birth of a new, you know, future crime boss, is the way that he was beating the kid in the shack. I mean, he was all disfigured.
True.
He's
the one that looked like the guy from Sin City.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Marv. Oh, exactly. And, yeah. I mean... Ever since you brought up Sin City, now I can't unsee Sin City, and this is hilarious. It's kind of like, okay, no, this is the tame Sin City, because we don't actually see things exploding.
Okay.
We don't see guts and
next
stuff.
Question would be then, why, if she is a criminal, why does Breathless Mahoney still look good?
Mm. Interesting.
Think about it.
I mean, they also, was it in James Caan's contract to not have to put any prosthetics on?
True. Very true.
Because he's one of the only ones that doesn't.
Yeah.
That's very good point. Maybe Mandy Patinkin? I don't know. I mean, he seems to have a taller forehead, but I don't know whether it's a receding hairline.
I don't even know how to describe that hairline.
Yeah.
Dustin Hoffman just looked crazy too, even though he was just like mumbles.
Yeah.
But yeah, I loved that's
his lip slightly.
Yeah, I really loved how they again brought into reality these just weird looking dudes, you know. And so that's one thing I will always appreciate. And I believe I'm trying to think, it's Caglione is the prosthetic guy that worked with Al Pacino on his Big Boy Caprice. Outfit, and I think that after that, Al Pacino was so happy with how his costume turned out that he kept Caglione on with him for all of his future projects whenever it came to, like, prosthetics and things. At least that's what I read.
Yeah.
I wish the movie would have leaned into these guys a little bit more. You know, for as much as we talk about how this movie goes, you know, kind of nowhere and it goes around in circles all the time and that kind of stuff, I think an easy way to have fixed that would have been, like, Mortal Kombat style. What I mean like that is, like, you know how, like, when you'd play OG Mortal Kombat and it was like you had to climb the mountain until you got to Goro at the top? Like, I would have liked to see Dick Tracy have to go, like, head to head with, like, all these weird dudes on his way up to Big Boy Caprice instead of them just getting kind of like staying in the background. Like, lean more into all these freaks.
They kill off five of them in the beginning, Valentine's Day massacre style. They, you know, and then they have the montage where he's basically just punching them all into jail, you know. And you're right. It's kind of like, okay, we don't get to find out. It's him versus Big Boy the whole time, sort of, you know?
Well, yeah. It took me forever to even figure out what Big Boy's whole ploy was. Even at the beginning, why does Big Boy go and kill all those guys? Why didn't he just invite them to the meeting that he has later on to, you know, try to get everybody on the same page?
That is a valid question. I feel like Big Boy had the same idea as, and I forget his name, but the best example I can give you is, remember The Office? Did you ever see The Office?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Remember how their plot of their virus was to steal micro you know, fractions of cents. Not The Office. I'm sorry. Office Space. I'm thinking, yeah. Office Space.
Office
sorry.
Space.
So the plan was to steal fractions of pennies.
Yeah,
Superman 3. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so that's what I feel like. Big Boy Caprice's idea kind of was, before the computer. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like, we're going to nickel and dime every person in this city to just basically amass a billion nickels, you know, which is going to still make us all rich, you know. Yeah. But one thing that I really, because speaking of like kind of leaning into these guys with the disfigurements and the stories, like, I don't know if you have any experience with Judge Dredd and any of the comics that came out before, like, you know, like, was it 2000 AD or whatever, you know, like the old Dredd comics. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with any of those?
I've seen both movies. I'm aware of the comics, but I wasn't a reader of the comics. But have a Wikipedia knowledge of the comics.
So basically, I mean, if... One thing that I would have loved to have seen from even the more campier Sylvester Stallone version of Judge Dredd was if they would have taken the prosthetics and the characters like they have in this movie and really applied it to, because if you, again, the comics, like I just, if you ever get a chance, you know, look up some of them online, they have like the fatties and they have like the weird, different, like kind of grotesque, futuristic like gangsters and gang members, and they all have their own kind of like disfigurements as well in this. Like, if they would have taken like the idea of what they did with the prosthetics from this movie and applied it to like that kind of Judge Dredd movie, it would be amazing. It would be amazing. And I really love the fact that, like, again, like you guys were saying, how they leaned into like just the fact that these people did look so just disfigured and grotesque but they're still accepted like in their social establishments.
Yeah.
You know, like it was normal everyday sight to see people like this. So I thought that was really, really cool. The other thing I want to say was if you've seen The Rocketeer, this guy, they very much look like the guy who was the enforcer that worked for the mafia guys in The Rocketeer, which I loved.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Rocketeer, we did that on this show at one point. Yeah, so we're familiar with that. Yeah, quite frankly, the only one that I'm not a huge fan of the look of is Dick Tracy himself. Like, I know there was this huge problem with this movie and casting, and they were having troubles and all this sort of thing, but it was a passion project of Warren Beatty to get this off the ground, and so finally he starred in it. But I mean, like, Dick Tracy, they did try the hook nose on him with a prosthetic, and they're like, oh, no, you can't cover up Warren Beatty's face, is what they decide ultimately. But, you know, I feel like Dick Tracy should be more of like a John Hamm type, you know, like it's that's how he is in the comic, square jaw and Patrick Warburton. How about Patrick Warburton as Dick Tracy? I don't know.
I would love that. That would be amazing.
Especially if it's this tone, right? You know, like this colorful. But I mean, part of the problem I have with Warren Beatty is he was so much older than them. Like, I know he was dating Madonna at the time of this movie, but like both Madonna and Glenn Headley were in their mid-30s in this movie, and Warren Beatty was in his mid-50s. Warren Beatty was 55. And it's just like, yeah. I don't buy it, even though they really dated in real life at that time. It just, I guess it's socially acceptable in cases, but it felt weird. Like it's the stigma of women in Hollywood where it's like they age out at a certain point, but a leading man, as long as he's handsome, can just go on forever, you know?
It was interesting for me to see. This is probably the only Warren Beatty movie I've ever seen. Up until this point, okay. my only real touch point
the
with,
Oscar
him,
flub,
with him was
right?
Like when he fucked up at the Oscars.
Yeah,
I definitely agree with you, Sean. Like, he definitely is not the realistic carbon copy of like the comic serial Dick Tracy. Like, they definitely could have chosen somebody with a little bit more sharper, you know, features, like facial features, like a bigger face. He definitely, he was, and that's the thing, is like, he's a smaller guy. Like, mm-hmm. He looks like he's very small. That trench coat was way too big for him. It's like they were going to cast somebody, and then they made the costume for somebody, and then they're like, oh, shit, we lost our star, put Warren Beatty in it. And it's like, now he's swimming in this big-ass yellow trench coat.
Well,
And that, to me, was the thing that kind of bothered me. And I didn't really, like, look at him when, I mean, there are some people that just don't age well. And Warren Beatty, being as much of an asshole as he was, you know, people claimed that he was, you know, I could see him just being kind of not the best to age well. So, I mean, I didn't really bother thinking about his age gap, but I definitely, like, agree that he just does not fit that caricature, I guess.
Is the Dick Tracy in the comic books more, like, how you meant, like, just more, like, rough? Like, I'm just imagining, and the only reason I say this is because it seems like the character that the script was written for, the way the other police talk about him, is like, he's a guy who kind of goes outside the law and, like, skirts what's allowed and that kind of stuff. So I expected him, the way they talk about him, to be just a little bit edgier and gruffer and that kind of stuff.
Well, not being from the 30s, I wonder if he ever gave Tess the back of his hand too.
Oh, Jesus. So I would describe the comic version of Dick Tracy to be more of I don't want to say Bruce Wayne, but that larger than life, almost even early versions of, like, Clark Kent, kind of like a bigger, like, square jawed, very, very, like, larger, but also, like, if anything, Batman and Bruce Wayne, kind of from the Frank, again, going back to Frank Miller, Frank Miller, his art style is very, to me, similar and probably maybe takes some inspiration from the original way that Dick Tracy was drawn. Like, he has that, like, thicker male figure and just very, very chiseled features, very squared off. Like, again, the nose is like this straight, like, kind of out and then down and then back up. So I would say much like that. But yeah, I agree. Like, that was another thing that kind of threw me off, is like, Dick Tracy's this, like, no, doesn't hold his punches, you know, doesn't really, I mean, he likes people, but he doesn't really care what they think. And yet Warren Beatty in this film, he's like, he can't even tell it. I'll be honest, while I was watching this movie, I didn't even know that they were boyfriend, girlfriend. Like, him and Tess.
Oh, him and Tess, yeah.
Yeah, like, to me, they just seemed like, they worked together.
Yeah.
You know, or they knew each other. And then, you know, it's like, oh, well, we should, you know, you like being alone. I like living alone. It's like this uncomfortable conversation.
Are
it's
you
like,
asking her out on a first date?
Yeah. Like, I, there was
maybe
three
we should
things
do something
I was
about
wondering.
It.
Yeah, we should do something about it. I thought he was either going to ask her out. I thought he was going to ask her to move in with him. Or he was going to marry her. Like, those are the three things that I thought that he was going to ask. But, like, honestly, like I said, I didn't even know that they were together until he, like, awkwardly, again, he had that moment. There's this moment where he kisses her goodbye when she leaves his apartment, and he kisses her three times. And it very much felt like the Pepper Potts, Tony Stark kiss when they first kissed each other, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's what it felt like to me, like two people who had never been in a relationship. And also, if he's dating somebody, why is he even leading on Madonna's character, who he's clearly not saying, like, much to, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we could do a little morality experiment here. Okay, this woman is dying. She is right there on the verge of death. She leans in for the kiss. Your woman is right outside the door. Do you kiss her? Like, at that point, it should be kind of like, yeah, no, I'm good. Mm-hmm. He should have learned his lesson, but no, he leans into that kiss.
Yeah.
He shows so much strength earlier when he's sitting at his desk and she's leaning across and trying to kiss him.
Oh, my God. Like, she's literally, like, arched back, like, at knees and ass up on his desk, drinking in front of him, and he's just, like, stoic in his desk chair. Like, that is a man with strength and morals and courage. There's a scene at the end where this, when you describe the plot, there's a scene at the end where Madonna is, her character is dying because she's been shot by, you know, Big Boy Caprice, and she says to Dick Tracy as she's dying, she goes, you know, what does she say? She said something along the lines of like, why, you know,
could you ever love why, could we have ever yeah, been could together you, or whatever?
Could yeah. we have ever been together? Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I guess there's a longer cut of the movie where he actually says no, but we are damn close.
Oh, I like that.
But yeah. they cut that out of the movie. I he just awkwardly stares at her until she dies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the original cut was like half an hour longer.
Yeah.
From what I read. Like, it's kind of like, okay, is that where the montages came from?
Yeah. I mean, to cut to the ending, I really felt like this movie deserved what, like, the ending should have just ended with the kiss on the bridge. The weird cut back to the diner was so odd, but that's my aside for that.
Well, I think it's for fans of the comic, because you have to see that the kid ends up taking his name. Because in the comic strip, the kid is, like, Dick Jr. Mm. Or Tracy Jr. or something. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that was another thing, because, like, I always thought that, you know, I guess, you know, we all know that, like, maybe Dick Detective, I don't know. Like, some people call private yeah. detectives, they call them dicks.
Yeah.
Private dicks. Yeah, yeah. Like, I always thought that Dick Tracy wasn't exactly his name. It was, you know, I thought it was, like, Detective Tracy or something, but I could be yeah. wrong. Like, I don't know. Again, that's where my knowledge starts to kind of flounder. But, yeah, we're just going to name this kid the kid. We don't know where he came from.
The kid,
We just found him getting his ass beat in a cabin one night.
Yeah. Yeah, and just takes in a stray. Yeah. Why not?
Man.
Back to the story. In that scene, when Big Boy has assembled all of the gangsters and Dick Tracy is scaling the side of that building.
Yeah, oh, my God.
Like, kudos to the stuntman who made the leap to that pole, because he smashed his head good. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, really, really hard.
Like, they said that Warren Beatty said that was him.
Oh, was it? Wow.
He said he did that stunt. But, yeah, you can clearly see him. Just cold cocking himself yeah. in the face with yeah. that lamp pole. Oh, man, that was brutal.
But the shimmy down the pole onto the roof of the parked car, onto the roof of the moving car, like, that was also an impressive stunt. Like,
yes.
That's one of the things, is a lot of the stuff that's going on in this movie is practical. Now, there aren't a huge amount of stunts, but it's nice to see actual car flips and things like that in this movie.
Oh, speaking of car flips, okay, we're talking about practical effects, man. Can we talk about the final shootout scene with Dick Tracy and pretty much everybody on and their mother has a Tommy gun, and Dick yeah. Tracy is like, Dick Tracy is literally walking in the middle of the street, just
middle of the street,
hammering out his Tommy yeah. gun, and, like, not being shot a single time, but the cops are, like, without even any concern, just blowing these cars away. Like,
yeah.
there could have been hostages in those cars.
Yeah.
Dick Tracy yeah. didn't know if Tess was in one of those cars. Like, yeah. they're just, it's like 30, it's like 3 minutes of just nonstop, like, Tommy gun action.
And that would have been a loud day on set.
Yes.
I mean, Aaron, you're a military man in basic training. I'm sure you learned that the safest place to be is out in the open
yep.
with just, you know, firing off bullets from your machine gun.
Yes, just
rattling them off.
A nice corner, like a nice middle of the city, you have like yep. a big block, and there's cops everywhere, and they're just, like, everybody's just... doing the mafia Tommy gun shoot where they're just going left or right.
Yeah.
We call that the yeah. spray and pray.
And they're like going out like one at a time. You know, it's like one car goes out, yeah. he shoots it down, and then it's like, okay, my turn, you go. You know, yeah. like
those yeah. gangsters are so stupid. Wouldn't you be like, hey, boss, like, those guys in front of us just got shot up. Maybe we should go out the back. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
yeah. yeah. This might not be working.
But
no, it'll work this time. It'll work this time. You go. yeah, no, that was the craziest thing, is just seeing him standing there in his yellow trench coat, you know, bright as hell in the middle of the street. There's literally flames and cars exploding around him. And he's just walking, lighting up cars with a Tommy gun. And, like, again, I would be concerned that there were innocent bystanders, either there should be, like, somewhere in that neighborhood, somewhere in some building. Like, there's just Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
Mm-hmm. Well, because they didn't hire enough extras. So, like Colin mentioned, the streets were empty.
They were bare. Curfew was on.
Yeah. There's no casualties. No.
No, but I agree with you, Aaron. I thought that specifically when Flat Top rolls up, because Flat Top actually, they're both kind of spraying at each other and not hit until Flat Top gets out of the car, and then all of a sudden he gets shot.
Like, they killed a lot of people in this movie.
Oh, yeah, every bad guy dies, I'm pretty sure. Like, there's not a gangster, like mission accomplished for the police department, because at the end of this movie, there's not a gangster left.
Yeah. Yeah, the next gangster shows up 50 years later, falls in a toxic waste vat, and turns into a clown. That's what we've got going on.
And literally does the same thing, though. He does the same plan. He brings them all together and says, we need to unite.
Yeah, I was going to say, what
kills one of them at the table like this guy did.
What you didn't see was that after Dick threw Bad Boy Caprice down that shaft or whatever, there was a vat of toxic waste down there.
Oh my god.
So, continuation. Yeah.
There you go.
Even though I guess Batman 89 is like a prequel. Although, to go back, like, I just want to mention with the Batman thing, the Danny Elfman aside, there are multiple points when you listen to the score where I'm just like, I would close my eyes and be like, am I watching Batman or Dick Tracy right now? Really hard to tell. But there is also so many shots that I feel like Warren Beatty watched that movie and was like, I've got this, like, Dick Tracy movie in my mind. Like, people really like this movie. What could I steal from it? Specifically, when Dick Tracy jumps through that glass window down into the place or whatever. The whole... Even I didn't know how the movie was going to end. So when Bad Boy Caprice is running around the city and he finds that tower, I was like, is this going to be a Joker, like... style thing? Or is there going to be a guy with katanas
that he's
going
to have to go city?
Through?
Yeah.
He's like, Dick, whoa!
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how much fun was Al Pacino having? I mean...
Oh, yeah.
Totally. But, like, okay, bringing up the jumping through the glass ceiling, how useless does Pat feel? I mean, because at that point, it's like Dick is stuck down in that room. Instead of Pat running off and getting help, he's like, hey, I'm going to build this teeter-totter. How much do you weigh?
Oh, yeah, he's doing, like, complex, like, physics in his notebook.
195, 196, how much? 210. Yeah, that's a great moment. But I mean, it's like, you know, what you're basically saying is, fuck you, Pat. You can be trapped in this room, and I'll go save the day because you're a useless cop.
At least he said cop. Oh, man. Yeah, that was another thing. It was like, You mentioned how much fun, you know, Al Pacino was having on this set. There was, like, the first scene that we're seeing, I was thinking about, where Al Pacino is...
the worst director, choreographer.
When he takes over the notes,
world.
And he's, like, giving, and he's literally, like, punching Madonna in the stomach, slapping her in the face, like, touching her butt, like, just being a huge asshole. And, like, but also being, like, the most, like, weird, like, singing along, doing the dances, you know. He's in the whatever you call it, the group of dancers. And it's just, like, that was, like, the weirdest moment. But it's, like, I can only assume he had a good time doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never seen Al Pacino like this before. It was weird. He's not a guy that I associate with comedy for whatever reason, but...
He has a very, like, there are certain movies like Scent of a Woman and The Devil's Advocate where he has these moments of, like, humor that are so, like, overly done and overly exaggerated with his just personality. It kind of, like, makes it a weird balance.
Yeah.
You know, he goes full Pacino. Like, it's like when it's like when Nicolas Cage is at his Nicolas Cagiest. When you set off Al Pacino, it's like, no, he'll have some fun. Hmm. Yeah.
Let's go.
You know, like, I've known this Al Pacino since I was 12 years old. I was introduced to this Al Pacino before I was introduced to, like, Godfather Al Pacino.
Yes. Or like, you know, one of my favorite Al Pacinos is, Every
Dog
Given
Day
Sunday.
Any Given Sunday. But he goes pretty full Al Pacino in that one. Like, he's semi-Al Pacino in that one. But no, that's another good one. Yeah. Oh man, I just, you know, I'm going through my notes and I see so many notes where I'm like, the art direction is so beautiful, and a lot of notes that are like, and Madonna is so hot, like just oozing sex in this movie. You know, I'm wearing black underwear, or I sweat a lot better in the dark. I mean, yep. She's just all over the place with, oh, it's too bad she turned so weird. I don't know. I don't like post 2000 Madonna. But this Madonna was so good.
Were there only two women? Or well, I would say there's obviously there was
Kathy Bates. There's also the orphanage. Catherine O'Hara. We mentioned her.
So there's very few women in this movie. That was one that like kind of a thing that threw me off, was just this, the. And I'm also trying to think, now forgive me, you know, I have to think about this. I don't think that there was a single black person in this movie.
No.
No, I don't think so either. No.
It's just, maybe.
Yeah, maybe a cop in the background, but I don't think so. Nothing comes to mind.
Probably not, no. Yeah. But one thing, again, with the art direction, one thing that I love is just even the detail that even the money wasn't real.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, like, I just love that. Or the fact that all the businesses and everything like that are just generic names. When the coffee is dripping on the newspaper is literally called The Paper. And they must have had so much fun with that art direction. And I think I'm going to do a little sponsorship corner. Because there's no real sponsors in this movie. You know, so always on the lookout for sponsors in movies or product placements in movies. This week, Dick Tracy is brought to you by Captain Cigarettes. Have a Captain. Cracky Flakes. Cosnell's Dress Shop. The Club Ritz. Better Mint Gum. Yellow Rose Cafe. And The Daily Paper. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. I did have fun still looking for something, but yeah, it's everything was generic in this, and I love that because it again gives you that feeling of the comic book of, oh no, they would not go to the trouble of drawing a George Washington on that dollar bill. They're just going to have big old dollar signs. I mean, you know, where's the scene with them with big canvas sacks with dollar signs? I think they missed that in the montage. I don't think I saw any of that.
Well, then they would have to have all like the thug henchmen with the striped shirts and the black eye, whatever.
Oh, yeah, the mask. Yeah, the Zorro mask.
Domino mask over there.
Yeah. And like A Christmas Story, that's where your black people would have shown up in this movie right there.
Oh, no! It's
with the sack over their shoulders.
get out of here, Black Eye Bart. I'm never gonna forget that.
Colin wasn't a fan of Christmas Story when we did that one.
It's grown on me over the years. I started watching that new one, the A Christmas Story or whatever it's called, the sequel they did this year.
Where they actually they got old Ralphie back for it, didn't they? I haven't seen that one yet, but So, okay, so you mentioned earlier that you weren't really a fan, or you didn't really know whether Tess and Dick were dating. Mm-hmm. So I guess you weren't big into the chemistry of them? Like, did you, do we care about Tess? I feel bad for Glenn Headley. Was she left to the side in this movie? I'd say yes, right?
I think so. I don't think they didn't really build up their relationship enough to the point where when she is actually kidnapped that I thought, oh, he would drop everything and be so concerned to find her.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like, it didn't even, okay, so she leaves because she's upset she saw him kiss Breathless, right?
Yeah.
And so she's gone. he doesn't know. All he says is that she, you know, somebody, the cop, I guess one of the cops who's watching after the kid, is like, oh yeah, she had to go out of town. Okay, so she goes out of town. How long was she gone for before he realized that she was actually kidnapped?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then it's like, that to me, like, proves that, like, to me, if somebody just leaves and goes out of town, like, they weren't in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fact that, you know, he doesn't even, like, because there's this one scene where she's gone, she's left, and she's, like, sitting there with the phone in her hand. Like, he doesn't know where she is. Is she waiting for him to call? She shouldn't be, because he doesn't know where she is. She should be calling him.
Did she leave a note?
Yeah.
Like, really, the only thing that makes me know they were in a relationship, or assume, I guess, I can't even say no, is that they were at the opera together. But I didn't even put that together until my second watch. I was with Aaron. Like, the first watch, I was just kind of like, maybe she's his assistant or something, and she kind of has, they kind of like each other, but it didn't really seem like they were together. Mm-hmm. Like, when she finds him kissing, and even her reaction when she finds him kissing breathless is more like a just disappointed, and, you know, I guess it's not going to work out. Not a, like, you cheated on me, you bastard type thing.
See, it makes you wonder if this is what courting in the 30s looked like. I mean, we saw this with The Rocketeer as well. It's just like, how did any of us ever get to be here? You know, like, it's such a long, drawn-out process with no public affection whatsoever. Like, if you're looking at this relationship on screen thinking it's platonic, then it's like, I don't know how that generation made this generation. So the voice modulator that they use for No Face is totally the Princess Leia one, right?
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
I guess with the No Face, like, the mask even almost looks the same.
Yeah, that the whole No Face thing kind of bothered me just because I couldn't put together. It made me question, like, is Dick Tracy one of those things that was bought out by DC? Because I was just like, I couldn't stop thinking, like, that's the question.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the reveal happens at the end, I was very confused.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a part of me that always wondered if that's what Dr. Claw looks like in Inspector Gadget.
Yeah,
you know, because you never got to see his face, so
I think they did do a face reveal at one point.
The last episode, the very last episode, yeah. You get to see him.
Was it?
Yeah,
I don't remember what he looks like. That doesn't matter.
Oh, wait,
to me,
wait, doesn't he look like Inspector Gadget?
Oh, I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised. Let me. You know what? I'm gonna Google it right now. What does Dr.
Yeah, you're gonna end up. You're gonna end up getting. Pictures of which one is it? Dermot Mulroney or Dylan McDermott? Which one is? Oh no, Rupert Everett. Rupert Everett. All three of them are interchangeable to me.
Yeah, oh, he doesn't. No, he doesn't look like Inspector Gadget. He looks like just kind of like an older. He almost looks like Doctor. What's his name from Mega Man? God.
Mega
Doctor Wily. A little bit Doctor like Wily.
Oh wow, that. Good pull. Because now that you've said that, it's like, oh, I'm suddenly just being downloaded with these flashbacks. I haven't exercised that muscle of my brain for a little while. my Sega Genesis knowledge from back in the day.
The Claw. Sorry.
No, that's pretty good. Let's see.
I'll get you, Gadget.
That's all I remember.
That's pretty good. This episode has gone from Dick Tracy to Dr. Claw impressions.
We'll bring you back for the Matthew Broderick Inspector Gadget movie review.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. You got, was it the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon? You now have to link, all of this back to Kevin Bacon.
Well, with the amount of talent in this movie, I don't think that's very hard.
Yeah, this movie is just overly saturated with celebrities, and where was I was reading something about how many like Emmy winners are in this movie. Like there's just
five Academy Award winners, four Academy Award nominees.
Jesus.
The winners are Warren Beatty, Al Pacino, Dustin Hoffman, Estelle Parsons, and Kathy Bates. And the four nominees were James Caan, and then I didn't write down the first names. I think it's Charles Durning and Patrick Castle and something Pollard. I didn't write down their first names, just last names for the nominees. But yeah, it's stacked. It's unbelievable how many people are in this movie. Like,
the body count of this movie was 27, by the way.
Okay.
So I'm pretty sure that was all in the gangster scene at the beginning, which was like four or five of them, and then 20 something in the last scene.
Yeah, there were so many dead people.
But the crime's gone down after that movie.
Had to have. They didn't get a sequel. So I mean, if the crime had gone up, there would have been a story to tell. But they took care of all the crime in the first one.
And this show has been brought to you by the word savage.
I read that Dick Van Dyke broke his shoulder in the scene when he gets gunned down, and he only had 3 days of filming and he breaks his shoulder. I mean, that's bad luck.
Yeah, that's what we call an insurance nightmare.
Yeah,
in Hollywood. I don't know if that's what they call it. Yeah. That man is a treasure. He's a national treasure.
He was like 60 then? So he's still pretty old.
Yeah. But I mean, like, he was tap dancing on a desk in Mary Poppins Returns, so, and he was mid-90s already with that one.
Jesus. Good for him.
Yeah. I mean, he was probably hurting the next day.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, he's almost 100. He'll be 100 years old in 2 years.
Oh, so he's 98. I was wrong. He's not 99. Norman Lear's 100, though, isn't he?
Maybe he'll do it. Betty White never could.
Oh, God. Too soon.
Too soon. You want to talk national treasures.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go after Betty White.
Sorry.
Wow. For shame.
Sorry.
You have to go watch Lake Placid and 5 episodes of The Golden Girls as a penance.
Shame. Shame.
Yeah. How dare you disparage Betty White. So they definitely enjoyed matte paintings and dual focus shots in this movie. That's another big thing that I noticed that I love the art direction, but like that train yard, the way like the trains just go on for miles, or like when Dick Tracy gets gassed and you can see the gas and Dick Tracy both in perfect focus. I thought, again, beautiful. It's beautiful. The story is very confusing.
Much like every scene that like you could see like the cityscape, the moon was always like perfectly in the middle of the road, like right above the cityscape.
Yeah.
You know, it was very well. I mean, it gives credit to the scene designers, the set designers, the artists, and pretty much anybody that was like that had a hand into making this movie feel and look like a comic strip.
Yeah, like it definitely feels like it would have been a once in a lifetime job for a lot of the art directors on to just be able to have that much fun. The costumers on that movie, I mean, projects like that don't come around often.
Yeah. And, I mean, think of a handful of them. You got, you know, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Cool World, maybe, you know, obviously this one. What else?
Cool World.
Maybe like Space Jam or something, you know, at least the first one. I mean, it's just like very few times in Hollywood will you see a really well done, like, scene and set of just, like, again, very, very, what else is another? I'm sure there's other movies where they did something similar. I mean, even like, what was it?
Joe versus the Volcano. Except for the middle part.
Did you ever watch, what was it, Pagemaster?
Oh, I love that movie.
You know, like some of those, just like they're so obscurely niche, which is kind of like it's a kind of a contradiction, but I think it rings true to when it's you won't ever see something like this, even though it's depicting something that you see so much.
Yeah. Well, it's even like bringing up the idea of the Dr. Seuss movies that, mm-hmm. You know, like I mentioned earlier, where it's you get to take this fantastical kind of idea or, you know, whatever side of the fence you fall on Tim Burton, mm-hmm. You know, some of the things that he does from Edward Scissorhands and Beetlejuice, where you get to design these crazy, wonky sets.
Yeah, it's the world building. You know, the world building, the details that bring in, like, it's just like you were saying.
Or Del Toro.
Like The Grinch is a perfect example. You know, it was something that we saw as kids when we watched the animated version of The Grinch. And then when they created this one with Jim Carrey.
The dark, gritty Grinch.
it's so layered when it comes to, like, it's for kids, it's for adults, it's for everybody. But it still creates this entirely familiar yet alien culture / world that we don't even need too much background on. Like, we don't need a history of how it's developed. I mean, there's theories upon theories ad nauseum, but to look at it and say, you know what, that's just the who way of life. It's mm-hmm. so crazy that they can communicate that with a scenery. And again, referring back to Dick Tracy, you know, those of us who have a little bit of experience with the actual Dick Tracy comic strip or the cartoons or whatever we've ever seen from it to be, I think we all here have that, that generous gift to be able to see that this looks and feels like a comic strip and we don't need to know much more past that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I love it when you watch a movie where they do a really good job of like, not just making the characters, but making the world itself like almost a character unto itself. There's nothing worse mm-hmm. than when you have a movie with characters you like, but it's just so clearly in, like, He-Man did this. Like, I feel like the Masters of the Universe movie could have been saved if they would have went this Dick Tracy route. Like, the biggest mistake of
full Grayskull.
The biggest mistake full of that movie is taking it into the modern world and out of Eternia. Like.
Yeah, but,
or Super Mario Brothers. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, there's another one. You know, let's just make Koopa a dude. Let's make Bowser a dude. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I agree. Make Yoshi a little like tiny raptor.
Yeah, yeah. That's why you gotta keep your fingers crossed for the Chris Pratt version. So yeah, Dick Tracy. I don't know. Anything else about Dick Tracy? I mean, we've covered the ending. We've kind of covered, like, I keep going back to, it's confusing, but it's beautiful. I mean, that's kind of, I'm stuck in that little circle of energy. And so I don't have much else to say about it, but is there anything that we may have glossed over that anyone wants to mention?
I would just say that, again, this, like, you nailed it on the head earlier when you said that this is a Warren Beatty passion project. And sometimes when we see these passion projects come to actual fruition and come into reality, it can be very much hit or miss on several aspects of it. Like, for instance, you know, what we're hearing about with, oh god, now his name's gonna bother me, Henry Cavill, you know, and him with his passion on Warhammer and The Witcher, not just the games but the books. You know, when these stars and these people who want these, you know, IPs created and brought to reality, they want it held to a certain standard, which again is great, but like, again, who's keeping them in check? Who's making it, like, who's creating, who's helping them create this world, but yet, you know, make it accessible to everybody? And I think that Warren Beatty helped create something wonderful here. I just think that this is a good example of needing to make it a little bit less close to the source material and more accessible.
Well, I think that's, like, part of the problem with, well, it worked with Batman, like, but Batman just works in all things. But I think the problem with, like, comic book or, like, you know, fandom related movies, I feel like pre 2000 really, is that, like, Like, people shit on, like, the MCU sometimes, like, who are, like, really big comic fans, because they're like, well, that's not the way it happened in the comics. But I think as it's gone on, like, people have more realized, like, there's a difference between it having to be, like, true to the comic or, like, the exact story and inspired by it. And I think Dick Tracy would have been better if he went more the inspired by realm than having to be like, oh, this is like strictly whatever the comic books were or the comic strips were or whatever. Like just actually put in the time. And I think that's kind of also the difference between when you have these high powered stars who want to produce stuff that's kind of close to their heart these days. Is like, I think there's a little bit more of a machine.
Black Adam.
Yeah. But the thing about Black Adam is like the Rock, like for the Rock, like I don't know. Don't get me wrong. Love The Rock. He's like one of my idols, whatever. Great guy. But like, you've never read a Black Adam comic. Like, get the fuck out of here. Like, you're not like, to say he's a Black Adam fan is a joke.
He's reading it while he's doing squats.
But anyways, like, I feel like the machinery is more present these days to like actually take a property and really like develop it and think about what they want to do than I feel like it was back in 1990.
Well, I mean, it's a big swing, and you got to admire that it's a big swing. And he went analog with it, you know, like he brought in this old style Hollywood to tell this old style story. Whereas, you know, someone like James Cameron just goes out and invents the fucking equipment to do whatever he wants. Yeah. But, you know, like, Warren Beatty, he just went for it. And so, yeah, it may have been a miss, but God, it's a fun movie to watch just because it's so pretty. It's very pretty.
Well, absolutely.
I'll hold on to my thoughts until we're at the end here.
Well, there we go. That's Dick Tracy. Now, Colin... Aaron, on IMDb, it scored 6.2 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 68. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 63% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 53. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like a Dick Tracy smashing his head against the top of a lamppost, hit us with some reviews.
Okay, MJ gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, "This truly is a masterpiece. One of my all-time favorite films. Absolutely every cast member is brilliant. Dick himself, portrayed by Warren, is brilliant. Madonna, my hero, is phenomenal. Kid is very well played and Tess is just flawless. But last but very not least, aside a great full cast, Al Pacino is just truly and utterly spectacular. What a great world we live in when we can have actors like Al. What an amazing part he played as Big Boy. Just watch this movie. It's actually superb."
It's on a first-name basis with Al. "You can be my bodyguard. I can be your long-lost pal."
Raul Sora gives the movie 4 out of 5 stars and says, "I saw it on the big screen in 1990 and the reviewers didn't like it. After this movie, many other movies came out as adaptations of comics. This movie really conveyed the feel of the comic strip. Dick Tracy comics were a visual entertainment on Sunday for adults and kids. The movie presented just that, and the music was good too. It really was ahead of its time. It was escapism. The bad guys were ugly, the good guys looked good, the cops were brave and honest, and it showed what great American cities looked like in the 1940s. It did show a segregated America, but it wasn't proud of it."
It didn't show it at all. That part I agree with. Yeah. Sure.
I mean, technically it did.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Yeah. And the way that review says, like, the bad guys were ugly, the good guys were good. And it's like, yeah, right? There is that raid where they come in to take Lips Manless out of Club Ritz at one point. And the guy comes in and he's got the big old scar down his face. And it's like, oh, no, he bad. He doesn't look, he's not good looking. That's clearly a bad guy. Mm-hmm. Before you realize you've been set up. Come on, Big Boy. You know how it works in Flint, Michigan.
Rotten Tomatoes super reviewer Kevin M.W. gives the movie 2.5 out of 5 stars and says, "One hell of a film. Beatty, star and director, throwing everything at you and the kitchen sink. The cast alone is an accomplishment, but costuming, design, makeup, music, cinematography, this thing is an unqualified work of art that fails to connect. A work without heart. It ought to be taught as a class, an agonizing disappointment."
Oh, wow. Mm, okay. So one thing I find interesting, you know, that this movie came out in 1990 and it has a 6.2 on IMDb, whereas you have like The Phantom, which is kind of a similar feeling, you know, it, which came out in 96 and is a 5.0. Darkman, which came out in 1990 as well, if you've ever seen Darkman. And that's got a 6.4.
Yeah.
And then Meteor Man, which you probably... Have you ever heard of the Meteor Man?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Meteor Man. That came out in 93 with a 5.2. So that, these are all kind of like early superhero-esque, you know, hero films, all roughly early to mid-90s, kind of with this, you know, very close rating scheme. So it's interesting. And then you look at the newer stuff, which I'm sure has all like...
Sin City. Sin City's probably 80s, yeah.
Yeah. So, interesting, you know?
Yeah. Maybe not the second one, but the first one.
Which one? The Phantom?
No, Sin City.
Okay, last one. Super reviewer David S. gives the movie 3 out of 5 stars and says, coming a year after Batman, this film borrows heavily from that film, using similar set scheme for the city but not as gothic, and borrowing Danny Elfman for the score. Like the film, the hero is a little bland and boring, and the film benefits from over-the-top villains, especially Pacino chewing up the scenery. The color scheme works well to remind you of the original comics, and although the storyline is very familiar, it's a lot of fun trying to recognize all the great actors disguised by their heavy makeup. Sondheim contributed the songs, and they work well, but Madonna isn't a good enough singer to really deliver them, and she's probably the weakest thing about the film.
Oh, wow. Shit. Damn. Ouch.
Yeah, didn't even mention Sondheim. Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Didn't even mention that a lot of the songs that she sings, or all of the songs she sings, I think, are Sondheim. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of the ones that are playing in the background... like on the radio and stuff. Those aren't Sondheim songs, but yeah, for me, I'm just going to keep saying it. It's a weird story, but you know, it was so pretty to watch. I was still there for every minute of this. You know, for me, it was kind of, why haven't I watched this in this long? And it just, it's hard to follow, but whatever. I think it's pretty.
So, it sounds like a guilty pleasure.
Yeah. This hasn't been for a long time. Like a lot of things that we've had on this show, such as Ernest, for example, this was something that I liked really hard for a very short period of time in my life. You know, like for a couple of years, I loved this and then just kind of forgot about it until last year when I received the Big Boy Caprice action figure. But yeah, it's pretty to watch. I still really enjoyed it, but it's, the movie itself is good. The watching the movie is great, though, in my opinion.
Total popcorn flick.
Yeah. Aaron, what about you? I mean, you did say at the top that you loved this when you were younger, and you hinted towards not so much anymore. You know, what was your experience like on this viewing?
I would say I definitely enjoyed rewatching it for the details. Like, as an adult, this is a fun movie to watch, and I agree with a lot of the reviews. The star-studded cast is just fun to kind of pick out amongst their makeup.
William Forsythe as Flat Top is one of those where you have to watch him for a while until you go, oh yeah, that's guy from that movie. Like, I'm pretty sure we've watched
kid.
A movie.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we've watched a movie on our show where William Forsythe was a cop in it, but I don't remember which one at this point. But yeah sorry, go on.
Proceed. Oh, you're good. Proceed, no, for sure, definitely an enjoyable movie to watch. With somebody who's willing to watch a not so great modern flick, or not so great, not so modern flick, who may be a Hollywood like nerd and who will enjoy it. But like, don't try and show this to like somebody who's, you know, knee deep in, you know, loving the MCU and everything that it's about. Cause they're going to find this to be a little boring and convoluted.
There's a small part of it that someone that is a big fan of like classic MGM movies,
yes,
would probably dig the vibe that this movie is giving off. You know, because of the fakeness, the soundstageness, and all that sort of thing. But those movies have clearer storylines, usually. Yeah. Right on. Well, Colin, what about you? Bring us home. You've got, you know, now at this point, like 7 hours of experience with this movie. What do you think of Dick Tracy? I mean, give us a final wrap down. Wrap down. What the fuck am I saying? Give us a final wrap up. Bring us home.
Rundown wrap up.
There you go.
Rundown wrap up. Wrap down. All those things.
Yeah, I don't know. I agree with everything that you're saying about the like the look of this movie.
Yeah.
But I also there's a saying I like that says you can't polish a turd, and I feel like the story of this movie is as turd as it comes. Like, it just...
Like, now, the Mythbusters did polish a turd, just so you know. They actually disproved that.
Well,
oh, my God.
It still stands as a philosophical concept. But,
you can't polish a philosophical turd, okay?
I get this was Warren Beatty's passion project, but I really feel like if he was that passionate about it, instead of focusing so much on the look of it, I wish he would have focused on the actual story of it. Because it reminds me of like a modern day Transformers film where it's like, let's just do every cool thing we can fucking think of and put it in this movie. Let's get everything that people want to see and just put it in and just loosely tie it together as best we can and make a movie out of it. Like, thank God for Al Pacino. He's the only thing in this movie that I think like kept me interested.
It's almost like he didn't have enough faith in his project to be able to say, you know what? We will get a sequel because it's going to be that good. So he threw it in. It would be like starting a Batman series with the Nightfall storyline where, you know, like it opens up with breaking like 50 inmates out of Arkham Asylum. That's how that storyline begins. You can't throw it into the middle of it. I see what you mean there, right? It's like, it's the kitchen sink approach.
I just kind of felt, like, I don't really understand what Big Boy's plan was. It doesn't really see, and I don't even know what Tracy's plan is other than to just, like, arrest him for murder and I guess bring him down. But it's like, how many times do you have to try to kill this guy and for him to get away with it? And then once they introduce, you know, Breathless as the faceless person and whatever is happening with the DA, all that, like, there's just too much happening. It just needed to, they needed, if he was going to steal so much from Batman, he might as well have just given Big Boy Jack Napier's plan and like did something with that and like, and followed like a similar premise because it's just like too much is happening and it's impossible to follow while you're also trying to weave in this like, is it there? Is it not there? Love story between like, the fact is he doesn't even go for either woman, really. Even by the end, I guess he kind of proposes in the diner, but it's like, I don't know.
He just throws her a ring to shut her up.
Yeah, basically. it's just so strange. But I will say that it made
me... If you want this many twists, though, you want a Bourne Identity movie, you know, or a Mission Impossible movie.
The only way I can think about that kind of like validates like all these twists is I would imagine that they storyboarded this thing on a big whiteboard or in the 90s, they had whiteboards in the 90s. I almost said like a chalkboard, but they may have storyboarded it and it looked just like a comic reel, like a bunch of comic strips. And they're like, this is good. This is good.
The movie.
And then
there
Mandy Patinkin stuck his head and went, aha, you know?
Yeah. All that being said, I think there's hope for Dick Tracy as a property, and I feel like
Warren Beatty still owns it.
Well, in modern times where people like, you know, actually employ things like writers' rooms and idea and like, you know, put thought into what they're doing, I think you could make a really sweet like Dick Tracy HBO Max series or Netflix, whatever.
Yeah,
something like that.
Is Mad Men HBO or is that
That's AMC.
AMC, okay. Because I was thinking, hey, if WB's already got their hands in John Hamm, I mean,
Not WB, please. We don't need another. We don't need a Dick Tracy on CW.
Yeah.
Good God.
Oh, like the Riverdale reboot of Dick Tracy.
Good
He's
God.
He's like some young, handsome kid.
It's Dick Tracy in high school.
But, I mean, yeah, but because it's 2020, you'd end up getting black Dick Tracy. So you'll finally get some black characters in.
Black, probably LGBTQ.
Yeah,
Idris Elba as Dick Tracy. There we go.
Idris Elba. Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
what?
Isn't that
or Sterling K. Brown? I'd take Sterling Brown too.
Or Michael B. Jordan.
Or Michael B. Jordan. Sure. Yeah.
Or what's that? What's the guy who plays King? That guy needs to do more.
Oh
things.
Yeah, Jonathan Masters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God, he is so good in everything he does.
I'm so excited for Creed 3.
So I've never been so excited for a sports movie in my entire life. And I watched Creed 1 and 2 back to back, and I'm like, yes, let's go for Creed 3. My wife watched the Creed 3 trailer, and she's like, do you want to see that in theaters? I'll go with you. And I'm like, no, you're not going. No, not with that reaction.
Yeah, that's the Michael, that's the Magic Mike reaction is what that
exactly.
One is.
Exactly.
Well,
that's the I'm gonna wear an extra pair of panties tonight reaction.
Yes.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's Dick Tracy, and that's our show for this week. Oh boy, a big huge thank you to our special guest Aaron Knowles. Aaron, always a pleasure having you on here. I love having you on here. I mean, always a pleasure, the one other time you've been on here, but love having you as a guest, Aaron. If people want to find you out there online on the old interwebs, where can they find you? Plug your shit.
Okay. Man, it was a pleasure to be here again. I had a blast once again. But if you guys want to look for me, I've got my own show with my co-host Chris Hacker called the Oblivion Bar Podcast. We talk about pretty much everything nerdy that's nerd culture, pop culture, video games, movies, comics, all that jazz. You can find us on iHeartRadio, Amazon, anywhere you can find your podcast. That's where we are. On our socials, it's Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at Oblivion Bar Pod. You can find me on pretty much the same thing at Better Actions. And if you have a chance, give us a listen. And you know what? It's always a good time. So I appreciate you letting me be here and plug my shit.
Plug your shit. Yeah, we dropped some names in this episode. I'm gonna have to listen back in the edit and decide on a short list for us to have you back in the future. That's for sure.
Absolutely, so. I'm down for it. Anytime we go back in our time machine and watch anything from my childhood or even before my childhood, I'm down for it. This is always such a fun experience.
Yeah, right on. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out is, well, just tell people. Telling your friends, word of mouth is so important for a podcast. Get us in other people's ear holes. We just want more listeners, and if you tell someone personally, it drives people to the show. Or something else you can do is use science and use those algorithms and go to whatever app you listen to your podcast on and give us some stars. Give us 5 stars, a little review. It helps drive us up the charts, helps us get noticed. Or if you want to become a Patreon member and, you know, donate a couple bucks, a cup of coffee a month, you know, help us keep the show going. Become part of our Patreon community and become an executive producer on the show by going over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. And you get a shout out just like executive producer Joshua Blum from the 13th Hour podcast.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all our podcast episodes, social media pages. We got Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like. And then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. And if you would like to hear more from me and my stories of being a bus driver, check out my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast. Thank you for listening, and join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.
And we're back.
And we're back after these messages. This break brought to you by Toyota. Toyota. Oh, what a feeling. Because that would have... That would have been what it was back in 1990, I think, is it was still a What a Feeling. Alrighty.
Chevy. Built Chevy tough. And we're back.
And we're back.